I'm Tobin Heath.
And I'm Kristen Press.
We're World Cup champions, Olympians, and the hosts of The Recap Show.
Week in and week out, we sit down with sports legends, cultural icons, and global changemakers to talk everything from clutch games to causes that matter.
This is about creating the future of women's sports, a future that's honest, inclusive, and real.
Join us for our reimagined journey. Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
The countdown to Browns training camp and the preseason is on with all eyes on the quarterback competition. Meanwhile, the NBA draft and free agency is right around the corner. Don't miss a minute of The Fan with the latest breaking news during your workday or on the go. Stream us at 92.3thefan.com or on your phone with the free Odyssey app. Jake Vollmer with you guys here on Overtime. I mean, a lot going down. NBA free agency is around the corner, yet somehow the way we get in sports also happening right in front of our faces because Desmond Bane is a part of the Orlando Magic. Was not the move, by the way, I was expecting to see this weekend. They expected the Magic to make a move, not that move. But help us break that down, where the Cavs now stand in the East, what has changed, if anything. We go out to the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. You can find his work over at Fear the Sword. It's Jackson Flickinger, and he joins us now. Jackson, what's going on?
Nothing much. How's it going?
We're doing very well, but I, needless to say, was quite surprised when I looked and saw Desmond Bane being a member of the Orlando Magic this weekend. Was not the news I was expecting to see. So as it happens now, what does it do to the Magic in the East? How much does this actually improve them and make them competitive for one of those top spots?
They are a better team now. What is interesting is that Desmond Bane is a good self-creator, I think, for his position. But when I think of the Magic, when I think of their biggest weakness, it's kind of at the point guard and somebody who can really set up an offense. And that's not really what Desmond Bane's specialty is. So I don't think he's going to solve all of the Magic's offensive issues like we saw in their first round series against the Cavs 2 years ago, where they really struggled on that end. And then last season, everything fell apart on offense. But Desmond Bane really does fit into what they want to do on the defensive end. He's a better fit than Kentavious Caldwell-Pope or Gary Harris. He's somebody who can really match Suggs well as a point of attack perimeter defender. He's going to fit in well with that back line that they have. So he should help their defense, and he should make their offense a little better. So how well that team is going to be, how good that team's going to be, I'm not entirely sure, but I do know that they are going to be a better team now than they were, you know, this time last week.
So, Jackson, sort of break this down for me, because we've seen this now in the past few years with trades. The Rudy Gobert trade was like 5 first-round picks. It's the same thing for Mikal Bridges, and this one no different, because Desmond Bane goes to the Magic for Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Cole Anthony, and then 4 first-round picks and a first-round pick swap. Why are we looking at these sort of first-round picks and they're just being tossed in and thrown away by these teams that are being competitive for players that at least years ago and in other sports, we wouldn't be talking that much draft capital being thrown around?
It is interesting, and it is hard to – I think it's hard to really point to one particular thing as the reason why that's the case. I think that if you're looking at a team like the Magic or a team like the Timberwolves, where in today's NBA, free agency is, I don't want to say it's completely dead, but it's not the free agency it was 10, 15 years ago when that's how, you know, teams would acquire players. Now with the incentives for teams to, you know, re-sign for more money and things like that, you see Kevin Durant, you know, his big offseason move is going to be a trade. It's not going to be in free agency. So from that perspective, trades are the way to get better. It's the new free agency. And if you're a team like the Magic, a team like the Timberwolves, where you're not going to really, that first round pick that's going to be in the high teens, early 20s, that's probably not going to be an impact player that really throws you over the edge, or at least takes you to whatever you believe that next level is. So I think that's why you're seeing teams part with those first round picks a little easier than before, because that is basically the only avenue that you have other than just, you know, hitting on every single draft pick. But with this, you know, the Cavs are seeing it now with the second apron coming in, is that these windows are so much smaller to compete in now than they were 5-10 years ago, where you kind of had a more extended runway. You really have a time where, you know, your best players are on rookie scale contracts, and you can fit more people onto your books before things get too expensive, before you become a repeater in the luxury tax, where you can really, you know, take a chance at things. So it's just kind of a lot of things coming together, and I'm not sure what that means for forecasting if you're trying to trade Jared Allen, if you're trying to trade Darius Garland. I'm not sure if they are the type of players that are going to get four picks back in return, because the market is different for every single player. And it's just, there's just a lot of factors that go into moves like this.
So, Jackson, I guess maybe this is the million-dollar question, but how are we supposed to, like, actually go through? Because we look at a first-round pick, and, like, the Magic are willing to trade away for, and it feels like in some degree, like you said, it could be middle of the pack, not a complete impact player. What's the sell then for the team acquiring those first-round picks, right? It's the same thing, not an impact player. Is that just more trade capital that we're throwing around, or is this an actual avenue like we see with the Thunder for teams to legitimately get better and they feel like that's a reasonable avenue to take?
So I think that, you know, the Thunder and a team like the Nets, they kind of acquire draft picks for different reasons. The Thunder, they're a team that operates like a small market team. So the only way to consistently have a winner where you're not bumping up against the tax, where you're not paying these huge tax penalties, is to continually cycle guys in and out. And, you know, we saw them try to do that. Like, they, you know, they traded James Harden. Like, I know this was 15 years ago, but it was still the same ownership group and GM that traded James Harden essentially for cap relief. And this cap environment is much more strict than that cap environment was. So a team like the Grizzlies, who does also operate as...
Hi, I'm PJ Vogt, and I want to tell you about my podcast, Search Engine. We try to make sense of the world, one question at a time. No question too big, no question too small. We will even answer your questions if you send them in. Stuff like, what happens when a cemetery goes out of business? What should we do about teens using AI to do their homework? Who buys luggage at the airport luggage store? Follow and listen to Search Engine in partnership with Odyssey, wherever you get your podcasts.
A small market team, if you want to extend your runway, you need to get, you know, you need to have more avenues to bring in rookies who could actually pan out. So a team like the Grizzlies, they may actually want to take all those picks and use them just to see if they can, you know, to give themselves more chances to hit on a pick, to get somebody who can be an impact player on a rookie scale contract. If you're a team like the Nets, for example, you get draft picks so that you can trade them for the next superstar player that becomes available. So I think it's just the thing with draft picks is that I kind of equate it to like a gift card, where you can do a lot of different things with the gift card. And that's sort of what a draft pick is like. You can choose how to use it. And that is appealing to some teams.
Jackson Flickinger, Fear the Sword, with this year on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Okay, Jackson, so let's then wrap this back into the Cavs. So we see teams like the Magic, who are one of those middle-of-the-road East teams that have a chance to take that stride forward. Do these the sort of middle-of-the-pack teams in the East making the moves put more pressure or create a sense of desperation for the Cavs to also attempt to get better and make moves of their own, do you think?
I think yes and no. I think that the reason why a team like the Magic feel like they can go all in, or their version of going all in, is because we see the Indiana Pacers are now two wins away from an NBA championship, but they weren't a team that people were expecting to be a championship team. So with Boston, Jason Tatum's injury, they're going to try to unload salary this summer. So there is, the East is more open than ever, but from a Cavs perspective, a team like the Magic leveling up shouldn't really change how they feel, because the Cavs feel that they are a championship contending team, and they are trying to make this team more prepared for the playoffs. So they're not going to be reacting to a move that the Magic make, but they also feel that same desperation because I think they know that the league is wide open now and that they also know with the luxury tax bill that they are going to be receiving at the end of this upcoming summer that it's expensive to keep a team like this together. So if you are going to pay so much money for a team like this, it better be worth the money. So I think that's more of where this pressure is going to come from the ownership group.
So I like that you brought up the idea that the East is wide open because this is obviously something that we've talked about. And I think a lot of people can obviously see with just the roster makeup and how this playoffs turned out. We look at the Pacers now, who are obviously in a finals game in action right now in Game 5. How much of a roadblock are they in the East? How much does it actually run through them as being the team to beat, maybe as we would have viewed, like the Celtics over the past couple of years?
I mean, if you go through the Eastern Conference, you become the team to beat. But I don't think they are a roadblock. I don't think they're a team that's like, well, we have to, every move that we make needs to be so that we can beat the Indiana Pacers. Like the Indiana Pacers exposed flaws that the Cavs have. And I think that those flaws should be addressed. But I don't think you need to make moves to try to necessarily be better with just the Pacers. We kind of saw that in LeBron's first run here. You lose to a Magic team that really played way above their skill level in that Eastern Conference Finals. And then the Cavs, they reacted to it. They went out, they got Shaq, and they lost who they were really in a move like that. So I think it's dangerous to make a move specifically geared towards just combating one team. But at the same time, the flaws that the Pacers exposed could also be exposed by the Magic. Like we saw the Cavs struggle with similar things to the Magic that they did against the Pacers this year. They struggled in very similar ways against the Magic as well. So you do want to react to your flaws, but I don't think you need to say, hey, we need to get player X because we have to stop Tyrese Halliburton or we have to deal with Benedict Mathurin or Miles Turner. Like, I don't think that's the calculus that you need.
So obviously a point that people would bring up is one of the things the Cavs need to fix. I think that they look at the guard position. Obviously, Darius is good. They'd point to defensively or even off the bench. Ty Jerome sort of getting exposed in that series. How do you go through and sort of address that position? Like you look at Indiana and a guy like TJ McConnell or the multitude of guys they have in Nembhard, Aaron Nesmith, Benedict Mathurin. How do the Cavs go about getting that type of player, obviously without being able to acquire those exact guys?
I think it's very interesting because the Pacers and Cavs are built very differently, where the Pacers really have a lot of guys who can do a lot of different things. And I think that's what makes them good. And when you have Tyrese Halliburton, he just makes everybody better. Whereas the Cavs, they're really built around their top three players. Their top three players need to carry a lot of the load, and their role players kind of revolve around those top players. Like Sam Merrill is only good as an off-ball shooter because he's playing with Donovan Mitchell and he's playing with Evan Mobley. And you can kind of go down the list of like, well, Isaac Okoro is super helpful because he gives you the defense that a Donovan Mitchell and Darius Garland don't provide in the backcourt. So a lot of the Cavs role players are more or less specialists that are there to help their best players be their best. And when we saw in that Pacers series is those role players really fell apart, but I think they fell apart a lot because of, you didn't have Darius Garland out there. You didn't have Evan Mobley being as assertive as he should have been. Donovan Mitchell was kind of thrown off his game, trying to do just a little bit too much. So I think that the Cavs' best players simply just need to play better. And I think things just look a whole lot better. And I know that's not the most exciting answer for, this time of season when we're talking about trades and talking about like moves that the Cavs can make, but a lot of it does really come down to like, well, Evan Mobley needs to be just a little bit better. You need Darius Garland on the court. And I think any move that the Cavs make going forward needs to be with, does this move make Evan Mobley better as a player going forward? So I think that's what they need to be looking at, but it's also like, the type of players that they need, they don't need the same exact type of players that the Pacers have.
Jackson Flickinger of Fear the Sword with us on the hotline. Well, it's no doubt some of the role players around those top three are going to be at least changing or guys taking on bigger roles. As we look at some of the younger players on this team right now who maybe didn't play a massive role this year, your Craig Porter Juniors, your Jalen Tysons, and we have Shaq bringing up Amani Bates into the conversation. What is the path? How much bigger of a role are those guys maybe looking to play this year, if at all?
I mean, if the Cavs are in a spot where it would be really advantageous for them from a maybe more advantageous for this ownership group if you were able to move off of an Isaac Okoro. So if you did move off of Isaac Okoro, I think Jalen Tyson is the player who you would be asking to kind of fill that, you know, fill his minutes. Obviously, they're very different players, so you're not getting similar things from Tyson that you would Okoro. But I think that Tyson has shown that he can help in ways that Okoro wasn't able to, but he still has a ways to go. So I think that if you were to look at, you know, can Tyson step up in Okoro's shoes? I would say, yes, I think he can, especially in a regular season setting. Can Craig Porter Jr. provide what Ty Jerome did? I would say no, just because I think at this point in Craig Porter Jr.'s career as an undrafted player, as somebody who is not the most physically gifted player and not the most, you know, doesn't have a great outside shot, I think that he is just kind of who he's going to be, which is a good third point guard and somebody who you would like to have on your team for the amount of money that he's making, but not somebody you would feel comfortable with, okay, you're going to be the backup point guard for this team going into the future and going to play big playoff minutes. Like, I would not feel comfortable with that as Craig Porter Jr.'s role. And I would think that if the Cavs can't get Ty Jerome to re-sign, they're going to have to try to trade Isaac Okoro for a backup point guard and try to attach some draft picks to him in order to get a guy who could play playoff minutes as a backup point guard.
All right, one more for you here, Jackson. As we're living in the world of fantasy land and what's been tossed out, Kevin Durant on the trade market, as we mentioned earlier. I know Shams Charania reported, you know, there's a couple of wild card teams throwing in offers. Any chance that that's the Cleveland Cavaliers and fantasy could become reality this offseason?
There is a 0% chance just from the salary cap, the second apron. It's really confusing. But basically, the Cavs are they're functionally prohibited from trading for Kevin Durant. So they are not going to be that team that goes and gets Kevin Durant. We have heard some reporting that they have been in contact with the Suns. I know things came out about that not too long ago. And I think that's more so them trying to be a third, fourth team in a potential deal where they're able to get some of the – maybe they can – get a rotation player that has to be sent over to Phoenix to make the salaries work. I think that's where the Cavs could come in, but there's a 0% chance that the Cavs are getting Kevin Durant.
Jackson, good stuff as always. Always good to talk to you. And as we navigate what's definitely going to be a tricky and winding road of a Cavs offseason, I look forward to talking to you further on as well.
I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for Murders That Defy Explanation, Mystery Seeking Exploration, and Shocking Secrets That Will Leave You Breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops, and neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.